Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 633. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about temples, shrines, and a palace, barbecue, K-pop, and the DMZ as we go to Seoul, South Korea. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Seoul. I'd like to welcome to the show Spencer Gentsch, the CEO of Hacker Paradise, who's come to talk to us about Seoul, South Korea. Spencer, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And we'll talk a little more at the end about what Hacker Paradise is, because I think it's interesting. But what's your connection with Seoul?
I have a lot of connections with Seoul, actually. When I was younger, I actually went there on a Mormon mission and lived there for 2 years. That was my first introduction. Then after that, I went back to university and decided that I wanted to study Korean language. So I actually got a master's there. I then ended up going back to Seoul and working for Samsung headquarters. And now, like you mentioned, I run Hacker Paradise, which takes people on trips all over the world. And we've gone to Seoul twice now with me leading groups for about 6 weeks at a time.
Excellent. And why should someone go to Seoul?
I think Seoul is one of the best cities in the world, to be honest. And one of the reasons I think it is because it's not on people's radar. Mm-hmm. Just as an example, we took a group of people over the summer to Japan for 6 weeks, and then we took them to Seoul right afterwards for 6 weeks. And to be honest, everybody was so excited for Japan, and people didn't really care about Seoul before we went. And then afterwards, kind of because of that buildup, I think, that they had for Japan, they had so many expectations, and then none of that for Seoul, their experiences afterwards were totally reversed. So most people had said that they had always waited their whole life to go to Japan, but then after they went there, a bit disappointed. And when they went to Seoul, it became their new favorite city to visit to, and they were planning vacations to go back to it.
Well, since I have a trip planned in a month to Japan, that's very disappointing to me.
You'll have to make a side trip over to Seoul as part of it.
And not this time, but I absolutely need to get there. What should we do in Seoul?
The big things that I would say to do that are lovely are some of the things you generally wouldn't think about. So some of that is the normal life stuff. So what I tell everyone to do when they go to Seoul is eat. Eat your way through the entire country, because the food and the cuisine is so different from other types of the world. The big thing about Korean cuisine, it is strong and pungent flavors and smells. So if you are somebody who is like me, I actually have a weakened sense of smell. So my sense of taste is also weakened. So I love Korean food because it's so strong and in your face. So there's stuff like that that I tell people to do all the time. Eat a lot. There's also some really interesting culturally and politically relevant things to today that you can do, like going to visit North Korea and going to visit the demilitarized zone, which is the line in between North and South Korea, where they still have troops there and the armies are stationed. So I tell everybody when they go, one of the things they have to do, at least for one day, is take a day trip up there, actually go into what is called the Joint Security Area, which is the area that the UN runs. So you can actually step into North Korea and take pictures right there standing across the line that is the border between the two countries. It's a must do while you're there.
Let's go into that in a little more detail. So one of the things that's going to surprise people is, and I think really help them understand more about the whole political situation in Korea, is how little time it takes you to get from Seoul to North Korea.
An hour by bus. Yeah. It is very close. There's not a whole lot in between Seoul and the border. Mm-hmm. So it's really easy to get there. There's actually some stories, I don't know if they're true or not, that one of the reasons that they picked where the Blue House, which is the Korean version of the White House. So the placement of the Blue House in Seoul is right underneath a set of mountains. And people have told me the reason of that placement is because it's so close to North Korea that then there's a blockage of the mountain so that missiles can't go and hit the president's house or something to that effect. So it is very close, and that structures many things about the way that normal life is held there.
So do you recommend people get on a tour? I know there are a number of tours that you can get to do that trip, or is that something you can do independently as well?
You actually cannot go on your own. Okay. They won't let you into the DMZ unless you go with an actual tour group. So there's many different ones, and there's several different things you can do. You can go through some of the tunnels that were dug by the North Koreans to try to go under the demilitarized zone. There's actually a peace amusement park up there, which I find really fascinating that you can go.
Oh, this I didn't know.
Yeah, there is a peace amusement park, which I think is a little bit trite to have right there. There's tours that take you to lookout points. Mm-hmm. The one that I recommend is the one that actually takes you inside the DMZ to the joint security area.
That's
where you'll be able to see the two towns that are inside the DMZ by the rules that they set aside. They're allowed to have, each side is allowed to have one village inside the demilitarized area. So there is the Korean side, which they call Freedom Town, and then the North Korean side, which they call, at least in the South, Propaganda Town. And not that those are biased in any direction at all, but it is really interesting to be able to see a little bit of that. Even if you don't get to go into them, there's lookout points where you can see them from where you are.
Excellent. Anything else we want to know about that before we jump back to the city and talk about the sites in Seoul?
There are a bunch of other things that you can do as a part of that, or kind of as a subset of that when you come back into town. Some of the tours will offer that you can actually chat with some North Korean defectors. So with the way things are set up now, if a refugee escapes North Korea, the South Korean government will take them in and help them get back up on their feet. And so there's a couple different programs where you can go and chat with them, whether it's on a tour or just being in Seoul. When I was there with the Hacker Paradise travel group I was running this summer, we actually went to a speech contest held by refugees from North Korea where they talked about what they wish the world knew about North Korea. And it was really eye-opening and one of the most fascinating politically relevant events I've ever been to.
Is it translated, one would hope?
It was an English speech contest.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was perfect for us. We went and were able to just sit down and listen to all of it and hear lots of different stories from people actually of all different types of socioeconomic classes from North Korea who had all decided to escape.
Interesting. Well, and if you're interested for a companion to this episode, if you go back in the archives, you can find one on visiting North Korea that also goes to the demilitarized zone, but from the other side, and it's a different experience. Let's just say that, and we'll move on here.
I'm sure it is. There's a lot of other things to do inside the city. There's some touristy things that I can recommend. There's also some experience type things that I would recommend as well.
Well, let's start with the touristy, just for grins, the ones that people are more likely to have heard of.
In the middle of the city, there is a big tower that I recommend everyone should go to. It's called Seoul Namsan Tower, and that is the big viewpoint on a hill in the middle of the old town. So you can either hike up there, take a cab up there, or take a cable car. And once you get there, there's beautiful lookouts around. There's a park. They have their own version of the love locks up there as well. So you can sign some locks, take some pictures, and then you can actually go up to the top of the viewpoint tower as well. The nice thing about that is it has really nice views if the city is clear, both day and night. And it's a really easy afternoon trip to do. You can even watch the sunset from up there, and it can be really, really lovely.
Okay.
Most of the touristy stuff is just north of the river. It's in the old confines of what used to be the old city walls, which you can still see running along the mountains and through different parts of the city. But you can visit all of the old palaces in there as well. There are 5, I believe, that are still there.
Okay.
I think you only need to go to 1 or 2. I feel like going to palaces and temples in Asia are kind of like going to churches in Europe. Like once you see 1 or 2, they all start to look really similar.
With the 5, do you have a favorite 1 or 2?
Yes. I would recommend that people go to Gyeongbokgung or Gyeongbok Palace. And that is the main flashy center one. It's actually right in front of the Blue House where the president currently lives.
Okay.
And is where they used to have all the historical king ceremonies back in the day. And it is grandiose and lovely and right in the middle of the city. So it's kind of this beautiful mix of new Korea and modernism versus old traditional Korean culture.
Okay. And then what else should we do in that area as long as we're down there in the walls?
There is a really cool stream that they rebuilt through town called Cheonggyecheon. And it used to actually be a river that ran through town. And then as Seoul was modernized, they built a highway on top of it. And the river became dirty and really gross. And in the last 15 years, they did this urban renewal project where they took out the highway and they redid the stream. And now it's this major touristy area that you can walk through. And sometimes there's art exhibits. There's places where you can just sit and relax and you don't feel like you're in the middle of a city. It lights up at night and has a lot of different cool aspects to it. So I tell everyone to grab some ice cream and then take a walk through there as well.
Okay. Is ice cream a particularly South Korean thing that I don't know about? Or
they love ice cream.
Okay.
So you don't really go to like an ice cream parlor very often. You go to the local 7-Eleven or convenience store, and outside they will always have a freezer with ice cream bars.
Okay.
And where in the States, I don't really like popsicles. I don't like ice cream bars very much. They do it right in Korea. They have so many inventive, cool flavors. My favorite is this one that is cantaloupe, or actually it's honeydew melon flavored, which I never thought would be a flavor I would like. And it is delicious. So yeah, you just walk past any convenience store, pick up a thing of ice cream for 50 cents, and then take a walk through the stream.
Okay.
There's a couple different shopping areas, Myeongdong, Insadong. They're really popular, have lots of shops where you can buy stuff in nice stores. You can buy street food. But the really cool thing to do in those areas is to go to the weird cafes. Most of them are pet cafes.
Yes. So
around the world, cat cafes or dog cafes have become a thing. And those are definitely a thing in Korea as well. But they've taken it even a step further. So there is a sheep cafe that I have been to. There is a raccoon cafe as well, not too far. Oh,
that seems like not a good idea. Are the raccoons in cages or?
No, that's the thing that I grew up with raccoons as villains, and you would not go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, they're domesticated, strangely enough.
Okay.
There's a meerkat cafe. There's a parrot cafe. There's even Koreans have this really strange affinity to poop as like this really cute emoji and like cute thing in life. So they actually have a poop cafe where like
I'm hoping it's more like stylized than
it is.
Okay.
It's totally, you like have to look it up to picture it, but it's cute and lovely more than you ever would think it could be.
And so people can picture this. I'm drinking my coffee, tea, whatever I'm drinking, and I'm petting a sheep.
Yes. Correct. Because lots of people at this point have been to a cat cafe or dog cafe, but Korea takes that to a whole other level.
I have to admit that when I hear about these or the owl cafe in Tokyo, or when I read about goat yoga, I just think it's a practical joke that not everybody is in on.
Apparently we're the ones that are out of it then.
Excellent. What else is there to do in that small center of town?
If you don't know much about Korean food, Korean barbecue is a huge thing.
Yeah.
And you can go to all sorts of different types of restaurants. The one thing to note about Korean restaurants that are different than a lot of restaurants where people are from is there's not a big menu. So every restaurant is specialized in like two or three things. So you actually pick what food you want to eat and then go to that specific restaurant instead of just going to a diner that has a menu that's 10 pages long.
Sure.
So you say, I want this type of spicy barbecue chicken. And then you go to that restaurant that only sells that one thing.
Hmm. Okay.
So definitely go try some barbecue.
Now, is barbecue one type of cafe, or do I have to choose my type of barbecue to figure out where to go?
There are so many types of barbecue.
Okay. That's what I was figuring.
So many types.
Can you give us some suggestions for dishes to look for or particular cafes to look for?
Kalbi is barbecue beef short ribs, which is very popular. Mm-hmm. So that is one I should say people should go to. Another one is bulgogi, which is marinated beef as well.
Okay.
The other one I will say that I really love is called takgalbi or takgogi galbi, depending on where you go. And that is the spicy fried chicken in a marinade. All Korean barbecue is marinated. It's not like American steaks that come out and are kind of dry. All the meat is marinated.
Not dry rub. Okay, got it.
No, it's all marinated. A lot of the places, too, you get to cook it yourself. So they give you all the meat. You have a grill in front of you, and you are actually cooking it yourself. So you can do it a little bit more rare, a little bit more cooked, depending on how you want things to be.
Okay.
The other thing to note about barbecue, and this is something you won't know unless someone tells you, but if you are barbecuing on a type of a pan that does not have holes in it, so it's a flat pan.
Yeah.
Best part is afterwards, you ask them to fry rice on that, because then they mix in a bunch of the juices from the meat, some of the leftover meat, the rice, and some other side dishes, and they make this really nice fried rice at the end that's delicious. So
nobody
will tell you about that, but if you go, make sure you get that.
Got it. So they won't necessarily know to offer it to you. They will assume you know what you're doing?
Yeah, they assume you're going to ask for it if you want it, and otherwise they just give you a check and you get out of the restaurant. Yeah.
Other things we should try besides barbecue before we move on from food? And you also mentioned street food.
So another thing about Korean meals, whether it's barbecue or any other type of restaurant, is there's always side dishes. So in Korean meals, you order your main dish. So I might order soup if I go to a soup restaurant. And then there's anywhere between 3 and 50 side dishes that might come out with it.
Okay.
Lots of those are different types of kimchi, which is different types of fermented cabbage or other types of vegetables. Spicy, generally.
Yeah.
But there's about 150 different types of kimchi.
Wow.
So there's the standard one that everyone knows, which is Chinese cabbage and is spicy and is red. There's all sorts of kinds that aren't spicy or are made from cucumbers or radishes. Huh. So you should try all of them. They're really, really interesting and good. So that will generally be a side dish. You'll have bean sprouts. You might have other type of fish or whatever that are as side dishes. So there's specific restaurants you can go to, too, if they're catering to a more cultural or historic or big fancy meal, where you go to a table and the goal of that restaurant is to make sure you can't see any open space in the table, because the entire table is covered with these small side dishes. And the other thing to know about side dishes in Korea is they refill them for you for free. So if there's a specific side dish you like and you eat all of it, you just ring the bell or raise your hand and ask for them and they'll come refill it. It's just part of the service of the restaurant.
Hmm. Okay. Well, and I see that there are 5 UNESCO World Heritage Sites in the Seoul area. And I think you covered one so far, which is the Changdeok Palace.
Changdeokgung Palace is one of the palaces in the set of 5. Yep. And it has a secret garden area that is a UNESCO heritage site.
Ah, got it. Okay. And then there's also the fortress. I'm trying to pronounce Korean and I don't know what I'm going. Hwaseong. What is that? You did not recommend it so far.
I would skip it. If you really want to go to a day trip south of the city, it's not in the city. It's probably an hour drive outside. It's a cool if you haven't seen fortresses and you want to be able to walk around a fortress a little bit. But if you've been to fortresses other places around the world, there's nothing about this that would make you go out of your way to go to it.
Yeah, see, you say fortress, I go out of my way to go to it. So I think you and I are on a different page there. Okay.
Fair enough.
And then the Zhongmyo?
The Zhongmyo is right next to the palace. That is the ancient burial grounds and where they have a lot of the Korean royalty buried. There's not a whole lot to see.
Actually, I think that's you're thinking of the royal tombs of the Joseon dynasty?
Yes, they are right there next to the palace. It's something that if you're going to do a day trip to the palace, you generally would go to the palace and then go to those tombs afterwards.
Okay, so that's all part of the same trip, basically.
Yeah, it's part of the same cycle. You usually will do those in the same tour or self-guided day trip.
Yeah, the other thing I was talking about is the Confucian Shrine.
Yeah, that's at the same place.
Okay.
Because I've always just called them the same thing. I'm not sure
how UNESCO
splits them out, but I'm pretty sure it's that same area.
You don't sound excited when you talk about it.
It's one of the things that's interesting if you're a history person mm-hmm. and you want to learn more about the history of the city and things about the way the life used to be. Mm-hmm. That's not my main forte when I go places. I'm not the type of person that goes to a lot of museums.
Okay.
But if you are into that type of stuff, you can definitely go to those and see some of the historical burial ground or the shrines. There's a really cool Korean War museum you can go to. So there are a bunch of things in town if that sort of stuff interests you.
Oh, well, and you mentioned museums. So the Korean War Museum, are there other ones that people who do like more the history and the museums like me should be aware of?
The Korean War Museum is the big one.
Okay.
And it is a relatively newish building with beautiful architecture and statues and takes you through the history of Korean wars throughout the ages. Korea has almost always been at war, being between Japan and China and Mongolia. It's
Tough neighborhood.
It talks about being the small fish in the battle of big whales. So there's a lot of times when other countries would come in and take over. And so a lot of their history has them being either at war or under subjugation from another country. So the museum talks about all of that and then the more relevant Korean War that is more familiar to people.
Okay. And then I think the fifth one is yet another historic mountain fortress, Namhansongseon. Did I come close at all?
Yeah, that is one of the hikes you can go to.
Oh, okay.
So I do recommend that people get out of the city for one day and go hike one of the mountains. There's a lot of different ones around the city. So there's small ones you can do. There's mm-hmm. big ones you can do. One of them is that one where you can hike up and see the old mountain fortress that has still the old city gate and some of the city walls mm-hmm. from back in the day. These days, it's not that impressive of a fortress. I would say it's more of a luxurious gate with some walls. Mm-hmm. But the hike to get there is beautiful. You get a really interesting view down of the city as well. There's a lot of different mountains that you can choose from. And I definitely recommend when people go, they should go to that one or one of the other ones, depending on what type of difficulty of hike you want to do.
When you say one of the other ones, are there one or two other ones that are some of your favorites?
So the close ones that are a little bit easier, Imhwangsan or Imhwang Mountain is okay. right in the middle of downtown, and you get really beautiful views of the city. Mm. And you can connect that to the fortress hike that you were just talking about. You just have to make sure to take your passport because it's actually a military zone. So you have to get a special pass as you enter to go into it. It's
good
right
to
behind
know.
The president's house. So they watch that area pretty closely.
Okay.
There's also a really nice mountain if you head further north called Tobong Mountain or Tobongsan. If you want something a bit more challenging, this is several hours and there are metal handholds drilled into the side of the rock cliff so that you can pull yourself up as you're doing parts of it.
Okay. Excellent. If we wanted to get in touch with modern Korean culture, where would you send us?
I would send you to a Korean pop concert, a K-pop concert.
Okay.
If you really want to get in touch with some of how Korea is now, right now, Korea is very much controlled by the Korean wave of entertainment. Mm-hmm. And so that has taken the rest of Asia and other parts of the world by storm, where Korean dramas, Korean hip-hop groups, all that is very popular. So I tell people that they should go watch a K-pop concert, because you can just be immersed in part of the fanatical culture that they have for that Korean entertainment.
And what's the easiest way to do that? To find a... I don't even know if I would know what a good K-pop group was or venue or...
Yeah, I don't even necessarily think you have to go to a good one. You could just go to anyone, really. Because they're okay. All... Every group has their own group of like fanatical following that makes it that experience.
Okay.
There are a couple of bigger arenas. I think there might be one down at Coex Mall, potentially.
Okay.
If you were to go there and walk around the big mall and experience some of that, they would probably have a schedule of when they have different types of concerts that are going through there.
What else would you recommend we do in the city?
Everybody, while they're in Seoul, needs to go to the Korean sauna.
Korean sauna. Okay.
Korean sauna. So it's a public bathhouse that you go to. They have them all over town.
Okay.
And you go, and if you go to a nice one, which are usually called Jimjirbang, they have multiple different options of things to go there. So for example, I took, when I was just there, 25 people to go to the Korean sauna. You go in, you pay $15 per person, and there's multiple different areas inside that you cycle between. So there is the area that is male and female separated, where you actually take all your clothes off and go soak in many different hot tubs.
Okay.
And you do hot tubs and cold tubs and massage tubs and all sorts of things. And you just kind of move around the room soaking in these hot tubs. Then you can also put on some clothes and you go out into a co-ed area where there is a restaurant. There are dry saunas that you can soak in. There's sleeping areas. Sometimes there's karaoke areas.
Sleeping areas for napping or for spending the night?
Both. It really depends on what you want. So if you're actually looking to backpack really cheaply around Korea, staying at one of these is a really good way to do it, because you can spend the night there. You can leave all your stuff in the locker. You can shower in the morning before you go. It's a really cheap way to backpack.
And is this a great big open area that I'm lying on the floor? Or do I get a bed? Or what am I looking at here?
Not a bed. You're probably lying on a little bit of a mat.
Okay.
But depending on the location, sometimes that is in a big open area. Sometimes they have specific sleeping rooms. The one I was at with Hacker Paradise just this last summer had a no snoring room even. So they separated
well, that would not work for me.
Snorers and non-snorers. Okay. So you can go and sleep there if you want. The other thing that people do at the sauna, which is something everyone should try, is you get your skin exfoliated.
Okay.
So when you are in the bathing part of it, you go and you sign up to get the exfoliation treatment done, and you just lay down on a table and somebody comes and just rubs your entire body with sandpaper gloves, basically. And their goal is to take off all the excess layers of skin that you have. And if you've never done it before, it is quite shocking to watch how much they take off. And afterwards, when I was there last time, someone else got up and said, "Did you see? They must have been using some sort of pumice stone on me, because afterwards I saw all the stuff on the table. It was like the pumice was rubbing off." And we had to tell her that that was not pumice, that was her skin that they had been pulling off during this rub. But yeah, you get it. You can get it once a month or something like that. And it takes off all the excess layers of skin that you have. And you walk out feeling like you have fresh, new, smooth, shiny skin.
I'm not sure that I have excess layers of skin.
You do. You have more than you think you have. You go and you let me know.
All right.
While you're in the city, you definitely need to go out Korean style. Okay. So Korean people aren't the type of people that go to a bar and sit there all night at that same bar nursing drinks. They are on the move all the time. So they have round one, round two, round three. And every time you move to a new location, and it's usually you jump to a different type of venue. So you might start at a dinner and then you're there for an hour, and then you move to a bar and have drinks, and then you move to a karaoke place and you sing, though not necessarily good. Korean karaoke is not about if you sing well or not. It's about how passionate you sing. So
that,
you do
that
some
is
karaoke.
Apparently true in karaoke with friends of mine also. And there was some misunderstanding about what good karaoke meant that, yeah, it's a sad story. So, okay.
The nice thing about Korean karaoke is you're not in front of a bar. It's not one stage in front of the bar, but you actually have your own room. So you rent a room that might fit eight people, and you have your own karaoke machine. So you go with friends. If you're going to a good one, make sure they have tambourines there, because the people that don't sing have to play the tambourine. That's my rule. So yeah, you keep making these cycles. So you go to karaoke, then you might go to the club, and then you go back to eating food, and then you go to a bar. So they move throughout the night, which is just really fascinating if you've never experienced that culture before. Usually the subway or the metro, which is the best way to get around town, that shuts down around 1 a.m. and opens back up at 5:30 or 6 a.m. So the mindset there, the Korean mindset is, well, now the metro shut down, so we just have to keep pushing through till it opens back up at 6. So they just keep making these cycles every hour. Now, if you're not that type of person, you don't have to. You can tap out. But going where you move around to multiple different locations is part of the experience.
Well, and you talked about sleeping on the cheap in the bathhouse or in the steam room. If I had a little more money, where would you send me? And if money was not a problem, where would you send me?
So if you want to stay in probably the nicest place in Seoul, they just built and finished, I believe it's called the Lotte Tower. It's been open for maybe a year. I think it's the fourth tallest building in Asia. It's got really nice hotel rooms. You can be up on like the 98th floor and have a beautiful view of the city and the river. So if money is not an object and you want to go posh, that's probably one of the coolest places you can stay. And it's very, very new.
Cool. And then for me, where money, where for I do care about how I spend my money.
For most people, what I recommend to them is to stay in either the Hongdae or the Shincheon area.
Okay.
They're right next to each other. They're on the number 2 green metro line. And when you're in Seoul, the metro is the lifeblood of the city. Mm-hmm. And the green line number 2 is the lifeblood of all the metros, because it makes a circle around the popular areas that you're wanting to go visit.
Got it. Okay.
So anywhere along that is fine. But the areas that have the most going on and have really cool places there, bars, restaurants, shopping areas that are very close, is the Shincheon and the Hongdae area.
Well, and shopping, you mentioned, there are definitely people who go to Korea to shop.
Yep.
So let's pay them some homage here. Where would you recommend we go?
If you want souvenir type stuff, Insadong is the place for you to get all of your cultural masks and any of that stuff that you might want. If you want more modern shopping, Myeongdong is a good place for you as well, next to all the fun different types of cafes.
Okay.
They have a lot of middle tier and high end shopping around there. And then the other thing that I will say for people who are visiting, the thing that you should buy, and it will be in every shopping area you go to, is beauty supplies.
Okay.
Beauty supplies in Korea are super popular, whether that's makeup or face masks or anything like that, and they're really high quality. So almost everybody that I know will go to Korea and buy a bunch of sheet face masks, hydrating face masks, and buy packs of them, because you can buy them for about $1 a mask, when in the States you would buy them for about $8 or $10 per mask. And you can buy packs of like 100. And when I go home and visit, that's what I give to my friends and family as gifts, is I give them all these face masks.
And if I was looking for electronics, which is, I think, the other thing that people are shopping for in South Korea,
there is a place called Yongsan Electronic Market.
Okay.
Which is enormous. And it's basically a mall. They have all these different electronic shops, whether it's cameras, stereos, hardware for your computer, cell phones, all that stuff, all in these different shops across there. So If you can't find it anywhere else, I always send people to the Yongsa Electronic Market, and you can always find it there.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned way back in the beginning going out to one of the places with a view, and if on a clear day, for weather, when do you recommend I go for the best weather?
The winter in Korea is cold, so yes. Don't go in the winter unless you're ready for that. It is not moderate in the winter. It gets very cold. When I lived there over the winter, I used to spend some time on the street talking to people, and after like 2 hours, your tongue would start to get numb, and you'd have to go inside so you could begin to talk again. So I do not recommend winter. The summer months of July and August are very hot, so I generally will recommend before or after that. May and June is very pleasant, except you run the risk of hitting a short rainy monsoon season that moves every year a little bit. September and early October are also very nice.
And if I was looking for the most interesting day to be in Seoul, one particular festival or event?
The big thing about most of the festivals there is they're family oriented. So the city's really shut down.
Interesting.
So for their New Year's celebration, for their Thanksgiving celebration, everyone goes to their hometown. So the city's empty. The fun thing about that is some of the palaces put on cultural events for foreigners. So I used to go there on those days. And the thing that I always did, which was fun and I've never been able to find anywhere else since then, is they do a teeter-totter or a seesaw that you don't sit on, but you stand and jump on. So as you jump, you then send the other person into the air, and they come down and launch you into the air. So you're launching, I'm a big guy and was with another big guy, and so we're sending each other 20, 25 feet into the air, and then you come down and launch the other person up. And they'll only put them out on those historic days. I wonder if they still do it. It might be too much of like a safety risk.
I was going to say they have very different legal system.
Yeah. I mean, one of the years that we did it, we broke the board because we were just too big. And it was a huge board. We just snapped it in half. So those holidays are generally pretty boring. Where on the flip side, like Christmas Day, which if you're from the US, is generally what you'd stay at home with your family for. Christmas Day is like a very popular go out and hang out with your friends holiday in Korea.
Interesting. Anything else we should know about Seoul? Side trips?
Most of the side trips that I'd tell people to go on, if you're just going to do a simple day trip, would be maybe down to Hwaseong Fortress, which you talked about, or going up to the demilitarized zone, the DMZ that we talked about. If you want to go somewhere a little bit further away, Busan, which is the second biggest city in the country, is maybe 3 hours away by train and is on the coast, which is really beautiful.
And kind of the far side of the country at this point.
It is the far side of the country, but it is a small country. So yes. You can get there pretty quickly. Yeah.
Well, and that's, for those who are history fans, Busan is the only part of South Korea that was not conquered in the Korean War, at the beginning of the Korean War, the Busan perimeter.
You are correct.
So yeah, it's very historically significant for those of us who do like the history.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in Seoul, which is beautiful and lovely, but it's all been rebuilt because it was destroyed during the war. Where right. in Busan, you can find a lot of stuff that has been there for 2,000 years.
Okay. Well, and you mentioned shrines or dime a dozen to you. Is there one that stands out for people who do like shrines?
There are some really beautiful ones down outside of Busan area if you really want to go on a day trip. I think the city is called Andong.
Okay.
And they're out there in between Busan and Daegu. And they're some of the most historic shrines in the country because of they've been there forever. They're hidden in these beautiful mountains, and they just have a lot of religious and historical significance.
Okay. Well, and we do have a separate episode on southern South Korea, so I will send you off to that episode for more information about that area. Anything else we need to know before we get to our wrap-up questions?
When you go to Seoul or Korea in general, Google Maps doesn't work very well.
Okay.
Uber doesn't work very well. They have their own set of applications for all of those. Mm-hmm. It's run by a company called Kakao. So download Kakao Maps, download Kakao Taxi Service, download the Kakao Texting app, because that is basically how everyone in Korea functions and gets around. So if you are trying to use Google Maps and you're trying to have it show you how to walk somewhere, it doesn't function. So you have to download these other apps to have that functionality.
Okay. Good to know. You're standing in the prettiest spot in Seoul. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I would be standing on Imwang Mountain at one of the viewpoints up top and looking down at the old city where you can see the new high-rises that are there, the old palaces, and the tower as well in the distance.
And is that the same place you took us that's behind the Blue House?
Yes.
Okay. That I got to bring my passport.
Okay. Yes.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Seoul, South Korea.
They have very little respect for personal space because it's a small country with lots of people and a small city with lots of people, right? It's just packed full of people. People will just bump into you and almost push you over at times, and they don't even stop and say anything. So the first time you're there, that will take you by surprise that people bump you and just keep running past. And then by 3 days in, you're doing the same thing to everyone else. But the first time you're there, that's quite surprising.
Okay. And I was just looking up, so 51 million people in South Korea.
Okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
And I believe of that, 26 or 27 million of them are in the Seoul metro area. They say that the size of Korea is similar to the size of Indiana.
Okay. It's about 20% the size of California.
Yes.
With 1.5 times more people. Yeah.
It's got a huge population density, especially when you're in the big city.
And if you had to summarize Seoul in three words, which three words would you use?
Modern.
Okay.
Busy.
Yep.
Delicious.
If you hadn't chosen delicious, I would have been sadly disappointed at this point in the conversation.
I mean, when I go on vacation, it's about food, and I keep going back to Seoul.
I sense that, Spencer.
Yeah.
Our guest again is Spencer Jentz, the CEO of Hacker Paradise. Tell us just a little more about Hacker Paradise, because we mentioned it a couple times during the show, but it's an interesting program.
Yeah, Hacker Paradise is a community on the road for remote workers. So basically, if you think about people who have the flexibility to work from home or work from another office for a couple days or maybe for months at a time, we basically round those people up, people who have the freedom to work from anywhere, and we take them to different cool places. So instead of just doing 3 days in Seoul or 3 days in France on vacation before you have to go home, we go and actually live there as people who would be there for 2 months or something like that.
Live there and work there, obviously.
Live there and work there, right. So we have accommodations, we have an office, we have a local community, and we have our own community. And so instead of just going to these places once and getting a small taste of it and then leaving, we're actually embedded in the local city quite a bit more. So you live there, you work there, you make friends. The lady who works at the corner coffee shop knows your order. There's a lot more of a familiarity of traveling in that way. So for people who have remote jobs, don't want to leave their job, but just want to travel while still working, look us up, hit me up. We love taking people with us and introducing them to this different type of lifestyle.
And we'll put a link to that in the show notes, obviously, because that could be an interesting match for somebody who is in our listening audience. Spencer, thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us about your love for South Korea and particularly for Seoul.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Remember to sign up for the Amateur Traveler trip to Africa in 2019, amateurtraveler.com/Africa2019. And then there's the hint of a possibility of a trip to the Galapagos Islands. If you're interested in that, go to amateurtraveler.com/trips and join that private Facebook group where we're talking about it. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.